Ellis from that baseline will flip it to George and into the corner for Miles. That's huge. Miles out of the right corner with a catch and shoot three. That play was drawn up expertly by Nate McMillan.
Hello and welcome on Tuesday morning here into another Sideline Guys podcast. I'm Pat Boylan, Pacers radio host and sideline reporter, joining us from San Antonio. Already making the trek from Houston, the Pacers take on the Spurs on Wednesday is, of course, Pacers TV host and sideline reporter Jeremiah Johnson. JJ, I'm trying to think back to you and I both started at least our on-air jobs at the same time, and I'm trying to think of more important regular season wins than we saw last night. I, of course, wasn't there, but part of the radio broadcast, you were there. Unfortunately, the TV had the night off due to the national game. But in terms of a big win, especially when you consider Houston got up 18-2, they're in their building, they're 42-18 anyway. Pacers have struggled on the road, struggled lately, all of those factors. I'm struggling to think of a bigger regular season win in my 3 years here. Would you agree?
Yeah, I was thinking when we went to our pick three later in the show that maybe we could have done biggest wins of the season, and I think we've already done that at one point a couple of weeks ago on a podcast, so we couldn't do that. I would say it was big. I don't know that I would say most important, because going into this two-game stretch, I don't know if you considered a team like Houston after you already beat Houston once and then a game at San Antonio. I don't know if there was great optimism for the Pacers maybe to win one of these games. I think it would have been big to win one, and it was big to win one. But the way that game started, I'll tell you what, I just wanted it to be close and competitive because it was a rough, rough start. But then when you leave the Toyota Center with a win and you feel like, I won't say you stole one, because you kind of dominated the second half and you had the lead at halftime. It was just an unusual game. So I would say it was a huge win. It was an unusual win. And now that you got it, sure, maybe most important of the season.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I don't think you stole it when you had the tweet. You had fans flocking to the exits with like 4 or 5 minutes left. Now, granted, they probably shouldn't have. We saw how the game ended and got interesting there at the very end. But when the visiting fans are flocking, you probably didn't steal a win. It shows how well they played in the second half. And I'm trying to think off the top of my head. I think Jeff Teague told, maybe you, I haven't watched all the video that you've sent in, but he made the comment that he felt like this was the first time on the road when they faced adversity they didn't get down. And when you consider 18-2, I mean, that's as much of adversity as you can face in the first couple of minutes. We saw something, at least in pieces, a little bit different, I thought, last night out in Houston than we've seen on the road. And they've been better on the road. They're 500 on the road in their last 12. But that was some serious adversity against a good team on the road that the Pacers were able to overcome, not just once. They fell down 16 in the first quarter. They fell down 17 in a completely different scenario in the second quarter. Overcame that, too, and actually had the lead at the half.
Yeah, it was one of the most unusual games I'd seen. And you never know with this team how they're going to respond to different situations. And I'll give a lot of credit to the bench, because over the last week or so, or the last maybe if you consider the games even before the All-Star break, with everybody healthy, now Al Jefferson isn't even healthy right now, but I think that bench has done a really good job of coming in and kind of setting a tone that sometimes the starters haven't been able to accomplish. And what a revelation Rakeem Christmas has been, what an impact he has made just looking at his box score, playing 20 minutes, 4 for 5 from the field. He's rolling on pick and rolls like he's been doing it his entire career. He had 10 points, and he showed some toughness as well, even some Roy Hibbert-style verticality plays. And then with Monte Ellis and Rodney Stuckey, these are veterans who've been through the war so many times in their careers. And they just came in that game last night and said, you know what, this isn't going to go down this way. And I don't think without the toughness that that bench provided, the Pacers don't get back in that game. And I think the starters then said, you know what, we're back in this game, then we're going to help finish this thing off. And it was just a great contest. It was hard for me to have a full appreciation, I think, of everything that was happening, because it was the first game or second game all season that I wasn't working. So we were sitting up in the middle of the arena, and special guest now, surprise guest for the Sideline Guys podcast is Chris Denari, and I sat next to Chris during the entire first half. And Chris, I was looking forward to being a little bit of a fan during the game. But it wasn't a fun fan experience in the first quarter.
No, JJ had to move because there was language I was using, Pat, that would not be appropriate for this Sideline Guys podcast. When it was 18-2,
He was pounding the table a couple times. I heard some words that I'm not used to hearing from Chris.
I thought we were right next. So Mark Boyle was on one end, and then Max Linewan, our game producer, and Ken Softman, Marika Bajos were over there by Mark. And then it was the stat crew, and then it was JJ, Jamie Burns, and I. And you know what? I thought I was going to get talked to by the stat crew because you're not supposed to show emotion. I wasn't, I guess I was on press row, but I said this, Pat, 18-2 was really bad. I thought it was almost the worst 18-2 that you could have, because not only was you were down 16, you looked bad doing it. I mean, I was shell-shocked with how bad it was. And for this team to come back and have the lead at halftime, I'll tell you what it reminded me of. 2003, in the round of 32 game, I'm doing Butler Louisville, and Louisville was up like 18 or 19 points in the first half, and Butler came back and had the lead at halftime, and you almost watched it and thought, how did this happen? And that's really what I thought last night. How did this happen? But JJ said it. The second unit was very strong. We've seen that now in the first three games out of the All-Star break. They were very good against Memphis in the first half. I thought very good against Miami. But in each of those first two games, the second half they tailed off. Last night they did not. I thought they were very, very consistent in both the first and second halves.
For the entire first half, it was really just one of two teams on an insane run. I'm not sure I've ever seen anything like that for an entire half for it to go that way. You didn't just see one team on a run and then another team answer, and then they were kind of even the rest of the way. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but Houston opens up 18-2. The Pacers respond with something like 18-6, I think. Then Houston goes on something similar. The Pacers respond with something similar. You know, you do 82 or close to 82 games a year, and you think you see just about everything. And Chris, you've been doing this now for double-digit years in the NBA and certainly longer with college ball. Runs like that have to be few and far between that you've seen.
Yeah, I mean, you know, basketball, especially the NBA, because of the length of the game, is a game of runs. There's no question about that. But last night was just one of the odder games you'll watch. Now, you look at NBA games and the NBA season, there are a lot of teams that will jump out to a double-figure lead in the first quarter, and they don't necessarily win the game. But very rarely does it feel like, you know, 18-2. I don't have my scorecard, but the Pacers have won a number of significant games this year, Pat, when trailing by double figures, and especially like they trailed last night. So that's a testament to their resolve. You have to give them a lot of credit, because that building, when it was 18-2 and Ryan Anderson is out there firing 25-foot threes and James Harden's doing what he's doing, you know, there can be no better building in the league. And, you know, for the Pacers to come back and not only make it a game but take the lead and win the game, I thought was very impressive.
And just a story, Pat, you know, I don't have the opportunity after most games to really go in the locker room like you do for the home games, and even on the road games, we're usually doing the post-game show on the floor, and by the time that show ends, the locker room doesn't quite have that same vibe. A lot of times people have already left to go out and visit with friends and family. So I had the opportunity to go in the locker room after the win, and just to get a little bit of a vibe, Chris was in there high-fiving everybody. Because,
that's right.
You know, he's the Chamber of Commerce person on the team, so he tries to make everybody feel good. But Al Jefferson was in there, and I always like to get a little perspective from Al, a little historical perspective on things, because he's been around so long, and he has such a great memory. If you ask Al a different time about a different game or an experience, and he'll rattle off something that he has experienced in now his 13-year NBA career, and he happened to be back in the locker room during the game because he's out still with dental pain, had an emergency root canal, and is still dealing with the effects of that. But the good news is he's feeling better, he's in pretty good spirits, but he was back in the locker room with just Al and Jared Bartling, who's on the video staff for the Pacers. So when I got into the locker room, Al calls Jared 6'7", because that, yeah. He's tall. So he says, hey, 6'7". He said, just like I told you, and I, of course, was curious about that, so I wanted to follow up, and I said, oh, you knew we were going to win, right? He said, oh, yeah. He said, when we were down 18-2, I told Jared we're going to win that game. And he said it reminded me of a game in his third NBA season. And I'm going to try to look this up and see if we can dig into the archives maybe for tomorrow's television broadcast. But he said his third season with the Celtics, they were playing Vince Carter and the Nets, and they fell behind 22-0, and they won the game. And he said, you know, sometimes you just get off to a bad start, nothing goes right. He said, I told Jared we're going to win that game. So I confirmed with Jared. I said, did he really say that? He's like, oh, yeah. So too bad there was no video on the record. We'll have to take Big Al at his word. But at least Al had confidence, and it was good that the players had the confidence as well. And what a game, an unusual game for sure.
And what's so interesting about that game is the Pacers overcame a huge deficit twice. Now, they didn't literally overcome it the first time. They trimmed it from 16-4. Then it shot right back up to 17. They had to do it twice. To close on a point Chris made, I'm just thinking off the top of my head, big comebacks. Portland was a huge comeback, I think plus 20 points. Sacramento twice, and now you've done it Houston, which was 17 points. That's at least four games, just off the top of my head, that I can think of this year. The Pacers have won where they've fallen down by 15 or more. Okay, I've got a question for you guys. Just three games and, you know, not a huge sample size of minutes. So am I crazy to be all aboard the Rakeem Christmas train? Because I am.
Well, I mean, from what you've seen, and I think we were all wondering when Rakeem would get a legitimate shot, because in the prior eight games of his career before these three, he had played 29 minutes. Seven games this year, 23 minutes. He played, the final game last year when the Pacers rested players, and he got some throwaway minutes. I tell you, he's done a really good job. He's undersized, if you will, at the center position when you think about the NBA, but he's mobile. He has, I think, created opportunities for floor spacing that the Pacers play differently when they have Al Jefferson. It has opened up the middle of the floor, and you're always happy for a guy, Pat, when you take advantage of an opportunity, and clearly that opportunity was there. They came out of the All-Star break. I thought Kevin Serafin had done some nice things, but they just felt that they wanted to go with the young guy, and he's responded.
I've been impressed with just the confidence he's had offensively, because some of those passes that he's been catching when he's been rolling to the basket, and then the finishing that he's been able to accomplish. I mean, you'd think a guy like that would come in and maybe he could play some tough defense, maybe he'll pick up a few fouls, but also maybe he'll make a couple plays defensively. But the offensive execution and really playing with guys that he rarely has had regular run with, it's kind of remarkable. And it'll be interesting now that there's a little bit of a scouting report out on him and teams maybe take a closer look. And I'm not saying that they're going into San Antonio and Popovich is game planning around Rakeem Christmas, but there's a body of work there. They're going to see what his positives are, what his negatives are, and they'll take advantage of that. So I don't know that you could expect to see 4 for 5 from the field, 10 points, 20 minutes, you know, every game moving forward, because you just basically still have to consider him very much a rookie. And I don't think that when Al Jefferson is back and healthy, you just say, sorry, Al, thanks. We're good. I think Al will still be a contributor, but I do think, and I said this on a recent interview, that the Pacers have been flexible with their rotations depending on matchups and depending upon how the game has gone, maybe much more so this year than they have been in recent seasons. So I look for some games, depending upon what that second unit looks like. Maybe it's a Rakeem Christmas game. Then there may be another game where maybe he doesn't if everyone is healthy. But at this point, I think, Chris, it's going to be hard to take him off the floor.
No, it'll be very hard. And with he and Lavoy Allen both playing well together, I mean, Lavoy 11 rebounds last night, a couple of key offensive rebounds when it looked like the momentum was changing. I mean, you have two guys that are giving you quality, solid minutes off the bench. And JJ hit on a point, and I think Nate McMillan did a really good job last night, especially when Houston wanted to go small. The Pacers countered at times. They had Rodney Stuckey out there with Jeff Teague and Monte Ellis. And I thought that was a very effective group last night. One of the issues has been three-point shooting. We have talked about it. Now, the Pacers shot it pretty well last night and got a big boost, you know, from C.J. Miles. I'd like to see them create more opportunities for C.J. because I think you don't have to make the crazy number of threes that the Bostons and the Houstons and the Clevelands are making, but you can't make 4 or 5. And I thought it was critical last night that the Pacers got to double digits from three-point range, and got some threes from a guy like Rodney Stuckey, who's only shooting about 30%. So, you know, just a quality performance, and we've seen two of those out of the All-Star break. And I would say that for the better part of that Miami game, you know, throw away the last 9 to 10 minutes, this team coming out of the break has played some quality basketball most of the way.
Yeah, Rakeem Christmas, since he has been in the lineup, the Pacers since the break haven't been out-rebounded, and we know that's been maybe Indiana's biggest struggle all season long. I just think he passes the eye test. We'll see if he has a spot with Al Jefferson or not, but a team like this, I think, certainly can use as many good rebounders as they can. I think I personally really like what we've seen from him. I don't want to spend the whole podcast here on the Houston game, but there's so many avenues we can go down, and one I think it's appropriate to hit on. You see sometimes on in basketball lingo, a term that has come up a lot is ATO, talking about after timeouts and the plays the coaches draw up. Nate McMillan, in my opinion, had his finest one of the season when he got CJ Miles the three, which essentially put the nail in the coffin. And I think he deserves some props for that, because the Pacers had the big lead, the double-digit lead in late, and it looked like they were going to run away with it. And then it started, you know, Lou Williams has what wasn't the four-point play, which was kind of Jay Williams at Duke-esque. But regardless, I thought McMillan deserved a lot of credit for that ATO, if you will, the CJ Miles finding him an open three in the corner, which essentially put the nail in the coffin.
Well, I'm just glad he didn't say Anthony Mason.
Yeah, yeah. Well, think about it, and yeah, again, talking true. About the Houston game, they had two of their 10 threes last night were banked-in threes. I mean, the only three that James Harden made was a banked-in three, and then Lou Williams throws in that shot. But think about it, Pat. The turning point, though, also came on that missed free throw, because I thought that they had so much momentum, and even though they got the offensive rebound, Ariza could not score that would have tied the game. That was a huge momentum swing to get the Pacers the ball. I've just been one of those that think if you have a two-point lead, it may only be 1 point more than one. There's just something about having a two-point lead rather than a one-point lead, and I thought that whole period was important.
Looked like it could have even been Paul George's sixth foul, given the way they had sort of started to call a lot of fouls against the Pacers in the fourth quarter. They don't make the call. The Pacers corral the loose ball, then they call the timeout. And to your original question about the C.J. Miles shot, Nate Taylor was asking Paul about that play after the game, and I was there as well and tweeted out Paul's reaction to it. And it was originally set up, every play has a bunch of options, or a number of options, and it was set up for Paul to, I think, get the shot, but he felt too much pressure, and so with any play, there was CJ with his favorite shot, the corner baseline three. And so basically Paul said he got collapsed, he felt the pressure, he knew CJ was there, and that was part of the option. Maybe not the original first option, and Nate McMillan said as much as well after the game, but you like to have a play where when it bogs down or when someone feels some pressure, there is someone to be open if there's going to be a double team. And I think a lot of credit then deserves to go to Paul George, because I think that fans would like to see him sometimes take over games and be aggressive, and we've seen that at different times this season. I mean, Paul George's fourth quarter shooting, his clutch shooting percentage is better this season than it's ever been, and it's really top five, I think, in the NBA if you go late and close clutch field goal percentage. But he's not forcing, and he's trusting his teammates, and I think that goes a long way. You look at a guy like CJ, it wasn't a big minutes game for CJ. He finishes with just 17 minutes, but and there were times in the game when you felt like you needed to get him involved a little more. He hit three threes, and none bigger than that baseline three that basically, I think, clinched the game. So it was a great play, and I think Nate's had some pretty good ATO plays this season. I think it's been one underrated part of this season that we've seen some really good out-of-bounds execution at different times. Now, there may be times that things get bogged down as well, but I think we've seen some pretty good plays out of timeouts this season, and that was one of them.
Let's close Houston on this. Our rival podcast, and I say rival in quotes and smiling while say it. I thought, had the tweet of the night. I know Chris saw it. The Oscars screw up with the La La Land guy holding out the tweet of the night. Agree?
That was absolutely the tweet of the night. I have seen that meme now, I mean, with about 50 different things that have happened in the last 48 hours. But that was a solid one, because that's one of those games, Pat, that I think there were probably a lot of people. It was a late tip in Indianapolis, 9:45. And right. If you stayed up and it was 18-2, you know how people's time is. I bet you a lot of people either turned it off or said, I'm going to bed. And then they woke up in the morning and checked their phone and went, what? that was an awesome meme.
And no Steve Harvey memes anymore, because he's been replaced. So it's Steve Harvey's also pretty happy these days, right?
He's off the hook. So I want to talk about this road. Go ahead, Chris.
Yeah, the only thing I was going to say, I've got to keep very quiet because, as you know, Pat, my son Wilson is 6 months into working for PwC as a staff accountant. So I have not talked to him about, quote-unquote negative press that's coming out for PwC.
Hey, any press is good press,
that's right?
Yeah.
That's right, yeah.
I want to talk about this road trip just as a whole, because it's an interesting one for you guys having – I think a couple of games, right, where TV is not able to do the broadcast. Plus, you've got the kind of odd scheduling quirk anyway, where you have a game on Monday and then don't play again until Sunday. So from a broadcaster standpoint, you're, of course, used to going out there and doing every game, or 99% of them, close to all of them, all 82 last year. And I think this is only the second one this year. So you've got a road trip here where it's five straight on the road, but you do come home and you have a couple of games. I think, correct me if I'm wrong, that you don't do here, including the game against Houston. What's that like from a broadcaster standpoint?
It's interesting because you get a little break at the All-Star break where we had done 57 games in 114 days. I mean, you've done the same, Pat. I mean, we had one game that we didn't do, the Knicks game back in January. So you're really getting a routine where you're prepping and basically, you're working every day in some form, whether you're prepping for a game, doing a game. So you get into that routine. Then you hit the All-Star break, and it's some needed time off. And I know, I was down in Myrtle Beach visiting my son, and it was weird because I'd get up in the morning, and I felt like I needed to prep, but it was good to take some time off. Then you come right back in, and you have a back-to-back on a Friday and Saturday, and then no telecast last night, and then we have no telecast on Monday. We'll do the San Antonio game on Wednesday and the Atlanta game on Sunday. Once we get past the Charlotte game, then it's, 18 games or so left, and we've got every one of them. So, it's a little bit different. I don't do well as a fan.
As evidenced by his first quarter actions.
I don't do well as a fan. I'd much rather be calling the game, because then I have to worry about all the things that go into the telecasts, the preparation, the stats, listening to the producer, the drops. And so, you can take the emotion out of it. When I'm just sitting up there watching, I don't like it at all. I mean, it reminds me of watching my kids, where I think as a broadcaster, sometimes you feel like you have a little bit of control, even though you don't. But when you're just sitting in the stands, not good.
I'm the opposite. I actually was really looking forward to a game where I could go to the concession stand during the game.
And he did.
He got a big thing of popcorn. Because one of my favorite things to do is to go to a game and to eat popcorn. Now, it was a little salty. I wouldn't rank it high on my popcorn meter test. And I'll be honest, Chris had me a little off because he was so frustrated. And I was frustrated as well. And honestly, I wasn't even enjoying watching the game. I was looking forward to just enjoying a game without the pressure of thinking of something to say every couple timeouts or walking around to the huddles. I just wanted to relax a little bit, and it was neither good popcorn nor relaxing first half, so I switched to second half, sat next to Ken Southman, and it was better. So no offense, Chris, but I enjoyed the second half
a little more. We were sitting up by Mark, and right behind us was like a club area, I think, with a bar. I almost wanted to go get a drink. The way that first few minutes was going. And my mindset was, the stat guy, Pat, the Pacers had not won a nationally televised game until last night, whether it was on NBA TV, ESPN, or TNT. The one game that the Pacers won that was supposed to be on NBA TV, our telecast, was not. The New Orleans game on Martin Luther King Day. They picked up the Orlando game that day. So I'm sitting there thinking, oh, here we go again. You know, this is this national TV jinx. And, you know, I'm just glad it really changed.
So it sounds like to me the biggest takeaway from that is, Jeremiah, if we were to do a pick three of best popcorn in the NBA, Houston's not making it.
No, Houston's not going to make it. A couple years ago, I had a little bit of a longer list, but I've been out of the habit a little bit because I hate to go on the air during the course of a game with a popcorn kernel stuck between my teeth. So I don't actually get the chance to partake in the popcorn during the game as much, but maybe that's something we could look for a sponsor, maybe for the post-game
show. Their media food, though, was not bad. Media food, it was like, what, a barbecue?
But this was the other bad thing. When you get to the game,
it was
2.5 hours before it starts, because the bus still gets there at the same time as everyone else is going to the game, and they have the same job to do that they have every game, and it gets there in time to have a quick bite to eat and then listen to the coach's pregame interviews, and then they push the tip back another 15 minutes because of the TNT, and I'm guessing so they could give the players only broadcast time to talk a little bit more between games. I mean, it was forever to wait for that game to start. So I admit I was a little bit bored last night at times, and I'm looking forward to getting back to work on Wednesday in San Antonio.
Well, we just talked about the pick three. Let's introduce our pick three of this week, and I think you guys are going to have far more memories to discuss on this one than I will, both playing and covering high school ball, certainly longer than I have. But it's always a fun time this time of year. The NBA season, the games are starting to get really important. The girls' state finals were just here at Bankers Life Fieldhouse. The boys will be coming up sooner rather than later. Of course, everything that goes on with college as we get ready here for the month of March. So our I'll let you introduce this, Jeremiah, but our pick three has a local high school feel this week.
Yeah, the Tuesday of sectional week is kind of always a little bit of a national holiday for me. I think technically it's Fat Tuesday today, right? But that's not where I'm going with this. It's the start of the boys' high school state tournament sectionals, and 399 teams, the 107th IHSA boys' basketball state tournament. We should reference as well that the state tournament is presented by the Indiana Pacers and the Indiana Fever, and everybody starts sectional week with the goal of winning a state championship. When I grew up, it was everyone fighting for the same state championship, and now with the four different classes, four different tournaments, but it's just a great time, and I love sectional week mostly because it's usually, and it's changed a little bit, but it's usually six schools, seven schools, maybe five schools that are all familiar with one another. And you all have a goal at some point when you start going to watch the sectionals of being the one to cut down the net. And I can remember so many times as a kid going to watch sectionals and just hoping and dreaming someday of cutting down the net. We had the Marion Giants at Bankers Life Fieldhouse on the Hickory night on Friday, and I can vividly remember newspaper pictures and even seeing those guys, because a couple times I went to the Marion Regionals and they would have a net necklace because they cut down so much net over the 3 years of that run, sectional, regional, semi-state, state, and it was the most amazing thing I'd ever seen, and all I ever wanted was one little piece of one net, and unfortunately was not able to do that and didn't come away successful at the Berry Bowl. But I thought for our pick three it could be a favorite March Madness memory from a high school perspective, a game, a moment that you saw, that you witnessed. And there are so many. I mean, I could probably do a whole podcast on different things, and I doubt anyone wants to hear that many. But I'm going to go with one that is going to go down as one of the best shots in IHSAA basketball history, and it was the Class 3A State Championship, the first of the Zeller State Championships, Washington against Plymouth, and it was the first year that I had moved on from Terre Haute, and I was covering the tournament for Fox 59, so Washington-Plymouth wasn't a big draw for Fox 59, but it was an important game to me because up until December of that season, I had been in Terre Haute, and I covered teams in the Wabash Valley, and I got to know Luke Zeller, and I got to know a lot of the people in Washington, and so while, you know, the Washington-Plymouth game wasn't going to lead the Fox 59 sportscast, it was relevant because Luke Zeller was a Mr. Basketball candidate, and I had done some features that year at Fox 59 on some of the Mr. Basketball candidates. And honestly, I just wanted to see Washington and some of the people that I knew succeed. And to see that half-court shot at the buzzer was one of the most remarkable moments in a state championship game, and I'm glad I was right there. And I think some of the TV camera angles, I'm about the free throw line extended on the basket that Luke made the shot, and then I was able to immediately go right near half court and get some interviews with Coach Omer and also Luke Zeller. And so that would be one of my most memorable high school March Madness moments.
Chris?
Yeah, you know what was cool about that? I was on the call. I did the play-by-play for that game.
I went first in case you would have stolen that
on the IHSA Champions Network at the time. So, yeah, that was memorable. I'm going to go back. I'm the old guy in the room. It's hard for me to say this, but 40 years ago, tomorrow, 1977, at your old stomping grounds, Eric Clark Gymnasium, where the Carmel Greyhounds play. I played in my very first sectional game. It was Westfield versus Noblesville. I had moved to Westfield. My dad was the coach. We moved to Westfield in the summer of 76. And so 1977, it's Westfield, Noblesville in the first round of the sectional. And it was, at the time, probably Westfield's biggest win. We upset Noblesville on the Wednesday night 40 years ago. And I was able, Pat, I don't know if you remember this, JJ would, but Phil Ford used to run four corners for North Carolina. You know, no shot clock. Well, we went four corners late in the game. I was a good free throw shooter. They fouled me. I kept making free throws. And we beat Noblesville. And then what happened? We had to play the Carmel Greyhounds on Friday night. And your Carmel Greyhounds, Pat, blew us out. But needless to say, in my very first sectional postseason game, I was able to help lead Westfield to a victory. So 40 years ago. Wow.
That's a pretty good story. That's a pretty good. For me, mine, I was trying to think, quickly going through a limited Rolodex in comparison. It would probably have to be at a time when I was announcing. Similar to you, those moments where you feel a little more personal with the team tend to stick out, even though this, what I'm going to say, it wasn't necessarily the best game that I've seen, certainly. You talk about the Zeller shot, Gary Harris. I was there when, in the sectional opener, HSC had to play, number one HSC had to play number two North Central, and Gary Harris throws in a half-court shot at the buzzer. That was amazing. But for me, it was my junior year. Carmel was stacked. We had Daniel Moore, who walked on at IU at point guard, Stu Douglas, who played at Michigan at shooting guard, Morgan Newton, who was a D1 football recruit at small forward, Jordan Brewer was a D1 football recruit at center. They didn't lose until, I think they lost one regular season game, and it was really late in the year. And then went to the regionals and won the regional opener. And I wish my memory was a little bit further down the line because it would have meant Carmel went further that year. But beat Patrick Beatty, who was one of the top players in the state at the time. Franklin Central went on to play at Purdue. And winning at Southport, the whole sectionals and the whole experience is really cool. But once you start getting to regionals, is when things, you know, really start to ratchet up. And you had Southport, a packed gym. So that gym is, Chris, I know you and Quinn just did a game there with Basketball Day in Indiana. It's a beautiful venue. And having Carmel win that game to go to the regional final. And then what's so funny, and I tell this story about the regional final, is Carmel had beaten Brownsburg earlier in the year. But it was a game that they had two really good players, and one of those two players was not able to play in that game. And Carmel beat them by 10 or 15, and I think we assumed that we were all going to go to semi-state. Well, and when Carmel lost that game, we all couldn't believe it. And now it's hilarious because, of course, they lost the game. The game was Gordon Hayward, and with him, underappreciated Julian Mavunga, who went to Miami of Ohio and was a first-team All-MAC player by his senior year. So, of course, you got an NBA All-Star and a mid-major top-five player come his senior year playing. Carmel had no business winning that game. But that whole regional experience to me, and then I think that was the year that Brownsburg went and won it all, was really, really cool. And going through the state tournament, I know, as you guys know, is when you get those packed gyms and places like that. That was probably my favorite moment. The combination of those two games, even though the second one was a loss, being able to look back at it and being Gordon Hayward, you didn't realize it at the time, but it's an even more cool moment now.
Yeah, there's no question about that. And now JJ has two young sons. One day, Pat, you will be a father as well. One of the highlights too, not only for me playing, was then watching my two older boys play high school basketball, and in particular playing in sectionals and that type of thing. And my middle son got to a regional. So yeah, there are so many great memories, and that's what March is all about, as we've talked about. You know, the NBA games are more important. You've got March Madness and college basketball coming up, and there's just something special about high school state tournament time. It really is a special time.
I'm thinking back to my Butler basketball camp days, and this just popped into my head. Your sons could all certainly play very well. My brothers were all better than me. The basketball gene just, I got the hype, but it just kind of skipped over me. But I remember playing at Butler once, and your oldest son, Evan, talking about half-court shots to win, and in one of those games, hitting a half-court shot to win. Evan Wilson, your crew could certainly play.
Yeah, they. You know, the one thing is, you get older, you can at least shoot with them. You know, that's the one thing. And I don't think basketball ever leaves you. It's one of those great sports that, you know, even when you're not playing competitively anymore, you can still go out in a driveway or a gym and shoot it. And that's what's a lot of fun as a dad. Evan is still on me every time he comes back to Indianapolis. Dad, when am I going to get on the practice floor at Bankers Life Fieldhouse to shoot? Because a couple of years ago after a game, he spent about 10 or 15 minutes on the floor at Bankers Life Fieldhouse shooting. And I took video of it, and he had a lot of fun. And so every time he comes back, when am I getting back on the floor? You know, you try to make it happen.
Those roots never die.
No, they don't.
All right, let's close looking forward here. Three more road games on the road trip. As we mentioned, the Pacers are going to come home between the Wednesday and the Sunday games. At San Antonio, that's tomorrow at 8:30. Jeremiah will start at 8 o'clock. And then they come home and don't play again until Sunday against Atlanta. It is a 1 o'clock start on Sunday. But part of the reason we spent so much time talking about the Houston game was, you look at this road trip, and after you drop the Miami game, who is one of the hottest teams, if not the hottest team in the NBA, you go Houston, San Antonio, Atlanta, Charlotte, all on the road, a couple of top teams and a couple of teams who play well at home. You just can't have this road trip be a disaster. And I think that the Houston win helps solidify that. And if you can take, I don't know, even in my opinion, I'm happy if you finish this road trip 1-2, and then you kind of weather the storm. And then the really difficult schedule that we've been talking about on the radio and the TV broadcasts, most of the reason it was so tough is this stretch that ends on March 6th. Now, they still have tough games coming up, but part of the reason the Pacers had the toughest schedule from, I think, February 6th on through the end of the season was this current month. And once they get off this five-game road trip, if they can tread water here, if they can survive it, which winning Houston certainly helps that, then things get much more manageable, both home versus away and the opponent that comes in.
And I think looking at the standings, now is a time when you could argue, I tend to look at the standings a little bit too early in November and December. You could say, well, there's so much time and it doesn't really mean anything. After this week, and if there's only 20 games to go, and you're four games up on somebody in ninth, it's going to be very difficult for those teams to make up that much ground. So while the Pacers still have quite a bit of work to do, and you don't want to be seventh or eighth, and you know, you'd like to be third or fourth, but at this point it probably looks a little unrealistic. Maybe fifth is about the highest this team could go, given their place right now and how many games are left. If you look at the teams that are in ninth, 10th, 11th, Miami, Milwaukee, Charlotte, and if you start to look at the games, and if they start to lose a game here or a game there that maybe they need to win because their other games they're just not going to win, you can really start to lock down and solidify a playoff spot. And Chris, when the season starts, you want to get in the playoff spots and have as high a seed as possible. So I think basically to try to get to six, because I think Cleveland is the best team for sure. They're going to be the number one seed, I think. It doesn't look like Boston's going to be able to overcome them. And I don't know that you'd really want to play Boston, but if you play them, fine. It's the time where after this week, not too many games left, and you've already finished off some of the more challenging games. It was just great to get that win against Houston, because 31-29 feels a lot different than 30-30.
Yeah, and I think, you know, so many people were talking, the problem about the All-Star break, it came on a six-game losing streak, and listening to talk radio and blogs and podcasts, you know, hey, this losing streak could get to double figures. And if you looked at it with Memphis, Miami, Houston, San Antonio, Charlotte, and Atlanta, the skeptical part of you, or the side of your brain that starts to think negative, is you could see that losing streak climb. And so that's why it's so important to win two of these first three out of the gate, and I think gives this team a lot of confidence. And as JJ mentioned, with 20 games left, you also start looking at other teams and what their schedule is. As good as Miami has been, and what they've won 15 of 18 or whatever, they still have to play like Cleveland three times, Toronto three times, so too does Indiana, and Washington. So they've still got seven games against three of the better teams in the Eastern Conference. And I think, you know, that's sort of the same type of thing when you look at Detroit and Chicago. So really, I just think it's important for Indiana to focus on what they need to focus on. But at the same time, we're all fans. We all tend to look at other teams. And the Pacers had a really good Monday night because Milwaukee got beat and Miami got beat. And anytime you can gain a game, that goes a long way when you only have 20 games left.
And I think both of you would agree with this. You know, you catch different teams at different times during the season, and that all probably about evens out. You look at Chicago, I think, who's had a run of games where they've played teams where the best player has been out, LeBron James most recently against Cleveland. Remember that run the Pacers had a couple of years ago where it seemed every team's best player was out for a stretch. And this news sucks, but for the Pacers, it at least is helpful. Kyle Lowry, he's out in Toronto. He's probably out the rest of the year. And the way the schedule plays out, you've got Toronto potentially three times here down the stretch without Kyle Lowry. You hate to see a guy like that get hurt, a guy that good get hurt, because you know what it's like when it happens to your team. We witnessed it a couple of years ago. From a Pacers perspective, though, they're going to have Toronto now potentially three times without Kyle Lowry, and that includes a schedule that starts to ease up once you really get out of this road trip.
Yeah, is it amazing? I was talking to somebody about this with the NBA last night, that you don't play Toronto until game 69, and then you play them three times in the final 13, which, again, they're still very good. I think with their additions of Ibaka and P.J. Tucker, those are some guys that can really help them. But you're right, without Kyle Lowry, it really hurts their depth in the backcourt. They've got a good backup in Corey Joseph, but Lowry's an all-star. He's an all-league performer, and the Pacers won't see him in the regular season.
Yeah, and it is crazy. You don't play. You mentioned the Toronto thing. It's an Eastern Conference opponent, and you're not going to play them at home until April, and that's the only home game. April 4th is that home game, so you play them twice in March, and those are both in Toronto. And you don't play it's wild that you don't play an Eastern Conference team at home for the first time until the season is about a week from concluding. April 4th is when they play Toronto. It concludes, April 12th. Let's conclude this by looking at San Antonio, looking at the broadcast here coming up. Jeremiah, as you get ready and Chris to go back to work. Wednesday, you guys are already there, the game, of course, Wednesday against the Spurs, 8:30, Fox Sports Indiana with JJ starting at 8.
Well, I'll be headed over to practice. We are once again in San Antonio for the off day, so I'll be headed over to practice this afternoon. And I expect the guys to be in pretty good spirits, so we'll get some good sound from practice today to preview that game against the Spurs. And I'm guessing we'll talk quite a bit about the bench and also Rakeem Christmas and the contributions that he has provided. You know, Pat, we talk to so many of the same guys all the time. Every once in a while, it's nice to see somebody like Rakeem kind of come out of nowhere, and you get the opportunity to talk to Rakeem. So it's been great to watch him and talk about him on this podcast, and I'm guessing we will discuss his performance on Pacers Live pregame and look forward to maybe look back on that game against the Spurs, because that loss to San Antonio at Bankers Life Fieldhouse in the middle of a six-game losing streak was a game the Pacers played pretty well, and so that has to give you just a little bit of confidence that the Pacers can match up with San Antonio. And we'll look back at San Antonio coming off that rodeo road trip. They always have a long road trip in February where they're not home, and this is their first home game back after that. And sometimes it's hard for the team on that first game back from a long road trip. So we'll see if that has any effect and can help the Pacers in any way. And look forward to Pacers Live pregame Wednesday night.
That's the Pacers in San
Antonio. I have nothing more, Pat.
Yeah, I think this is more than Chris had bargained for when I said, hey, do you want to come on the podcast?
No,
and I was like, get out of my room, Jeremiah.
I'm good. This has been fun. I get to be a guest on the sideline, guys. I mean, I've got you guys in my podcast list. So now that I've had a chance to be on the show, it's great.
Yeah, I like this, JJ. You've got Chris with you. You've got Quinn with you. You got a lot of interesting people with you. We should do the guest thing more often. Heck, bring Chris on again.
Well, and we even got to be a part of your radio broadcast last night with Mark Boyle.
Right. Yeah, the crossover's been good. But, guys, certainly appreciate your time out in San Antonio, and we'll see you back here. Luckily, it's not a five-game road trip in its entirety. You do get to come home for a couple of days, which I'm sure is nice. But appreciate your time on the Sideline Guys podcast.
Okay, thanks, Pat.
Thanks, Pat.